Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Pepper reading the Midland Reporter Telegram front page for Wednesday, April 26, 2023. Details on downtown hotel project offered at Town Hall. Group seeks abatement for Tapestry Hotel by Hilton Project by Ben Schaffer. Escamilla Media held a town hall Thursday regarding the Tapestry Hotel by Hilton, a project slated to take place at 112 South Lorraine Street in downtown Midland. The crowd for the town hall at the Bush Convention Center was thin. Al Escamilla, president of Escamilla Media, said this was positive considering if there was opposition to the new hotel being built, Midlanders would come out and voice their concerns. Escamilla said developers plan on asking the Midland City Council for a 10-year tax abatement on hotel occupancy tax and property tax. The hotel is being proposed to the Midland City Council on May 9. Midland Central Appraisal District currently lists the property's market value as $1.2 million. Midlanders who showed up to support the hotel said the new property will help increase downtown foot traffic and will benefit downtown local businesses. Our demographic has changed so much, I think the median age here is 35 years old, Escamilla said. That demographic looks for something to do. Safe, lighted, places to eat. Our downtown is starting to become that. Other Midlanders in attendance said they're excited about the hotel and that downtown Midland doesn't have a hotel like the Tapestry. Tapestry Hotel by Hilton eventually would bring more than 10 times the amount of property taxes to Midland, ranging from approximately $200,000 to $300,000 in taxes to Midland ISD every year to approximately $20,000 to $30,000 to the Midland Hospital District, according to a fact sheet provided by Escamilla. The hotel would provide travelers with an original, locally curated, and vibrant hotel experience plus an upscale restaurant. Escamilla has described the Tapestry Hotel by Hilton as hyper-local. Aside from true-to-Midland regional interior design, the Tapestry can incorporate local businesses within the property. Trinity Trial Tuesday, Arresting Officer Takes the Stand, by Iris Foster. Midland Police Sergeant Jenny Alonzo took the stand Tuesday during the trial involving four Trinity School administrators charged with failure to report sexual abuse within 48 hours with intent to conceal. Afternoon session. Defense attorneys showed the contrast between Trinity administrators' investigation of improper touching allegations by a teenage student versus the 3 days it took then Midland Police Department Detective Jenny Alonzo to investigate. Alonzo stated she first believed all incidents of indecency with a child had occurred by December 12, 2019. After being on the other side of the glass during the female's forensic interview at the Children's Advocacy Center on February 22, 2022, she learned of additional incidents. It was only after she produced her affidavit that she learned of other certain details. She testified that a meeting with District Attorney Laura Nodolf and ADA Jennifer Lively greenlighted her actions because she was told to handle it like the other one, Midland Christian School case a few days earlier. Alonzo said she believed there was no question about probable cause, but Shelby Hammer's counsel, Brian Carney, asked if it would have been less reckless to have all of the facts. She responded no, but when he asked, "If you had to do this all over again, would you?" she responded no as well. Melissa McCabe retired in 2022 after teaching at Trinity for 20 years. She taught both teens involved and was the advisor for the female student in 6th, 7th, and part of 8th grade. Because of that relationship, she was asked to be the safe person in the interview with head of middle school Crystal Myers, Todd Fries, and the student on January 22, 2020. Once she knew she had the parent's support, she agreed. McCabe detailed the meeting from early icebreakers to asking what the male had done. Fries left the meeting to keep it all female. The teen responded that the male slapped and pinched her butt, asked for nude photos, which she refused, sent texts asking if he could touch her, to which she said, okay, maybe, asked if he could kiss her, which she refused, asked if he could do the bad thing, to which she said no, not until 9th grade. Myers immediately pursued the teen's understanding of certain words based upon terms other students had used when they were questioned by Fries about these allegations. She clarified what part of her body she meant. When asked if she felt safe, the student responded in the affirmative, but she was worried that 8th grade girls who were friends of the male student would take his side and be mean to her. Inappropriate photos were also discussed, which led Myers and McCabe to decide who would submit a report, and Myers did. McCabe also sat on the student conduct review team with Fries and others. On January 29, 2020, the male student, in addition to his suspension, was mandated to see a counselor 3 times and was ordered to cease texting, phoning, and sending photos to the female. Attorney Frank Sellers, on behalf of Myers, asked McCabe if she believed indecency with a child occurred after hearing from the teen. She said no, the events were inappropriate touching because the girl never mentioned breast, penis, feeling erections, or 4 months of butt slapping to her. She claimed to like the young teen and had counseled her about minor things, but had never seen anything related to the male in question or she would have intervened. The defense team also asked for McCabe's assessment of her coworkers, and she had high praise for all 4 administrators on trial, calling them thorough professionals who are 100% about kids. Recalling Alonzo, who was promoted recently, Dan Hurley advised her that his client Freeze had more hours of training in how to interview juveniles than Tracy Brown at the Children's Advocacy Center. Therefore, he told her, if a professional does not have a cause to believe, a report shouldn't be made. In addition, the 2 MPD resource officers on campus were aware of the female's assertions and they didn't make a report or get indicted. Carney enumerated the different ways she could have handled this case, i.e. turning interviews with CAC and parents over to the district attorney and filing it as a misdemeanor or as a felony. She admitted that the case was dropped in her lap. The day ended with Allison Clayton's questioning on behalf of Adrian Clifton. When Alonzo couldn't recall the time she and multiple police officers and the crime scene van arrived at the school, Clayton published a photo of Trinity's front door. She showed how at 11:30 a.m. on February 25, 2022, when the administrators were escorted out in handcuffs, the kindergartners were eating lunch in full view of the front doors. Also, numerous parents were delivering hot lunches to their children. All of this, she said, after 3 days of investigation. Morning session. The state's witness, Timothy Jones, acting head of school, became a character witness for the defense as the 5th day of the trial got underway. 4 Trinity school administrators are charged with failure to report sexual abuse within 48 hours with intent to conceal. Jones gave unequivocal character references for the 4 defendants, said he personally had known them for 5 years, and held them all in high regard. Brian Carney pursued Jones's knowledge of the family of the female teen bringing the complaint. He said he had met the mother when her older child was in high school, and their early interaction let him know how she wanted things handled. He had gotten acquainted with the male student in the past year or so and found him to be respectful and forthcoming. The high school student is taking classes remotely at this time after adamantly denying everything but touching her butt 3 times in Spanish class. After his testimony, the state called Sergeant Alonzo, the arresting officer in both cases involving Midland private school administrators and faculty in February 2022, Midland Christian School being the other. The credibility of Sergeant Alonzo was debated by counsel due to personal issues. Once she was sworn in, she responded, "I don't recall," so much that Sellers asked why she hadn't reviewed her notes in preparation for this trial. At the time of the arrest, Alonzo was a detective for crimes against persons. During the 6 years and 10 months of her tenure in that department, she did not recall arresting anyone prior to February 2022. After being assigned this case by her supervisor, she said her investigation was based solely upon disclosures by the female student during her forensic interview at the Child Advocacy Center and a lengthy interview with the teen's parents. She believed that the pertinent texts and Instagram photos had been deleted and couldn't be retrieved. Alonzo never interviewed the teens in question, their peers, the Spanish teacher, or anyone who might have known the parents for a long time, according to testimony. When she obtained the search warrant for electronics used by the 4 and the server, which she'd never requested before, she also obtained arrest warrants and arrived at the school on February 25, 2022. She then testified before the grand jury with Lively in November when indictments were handed down. Midland Health. Ashley Labarda wins the Daisy Award. Midland Health reported this week that Ashley Labarda is the latest DAISY Award winner. Labarda works in the labor and delivery unit and was nominated for the prestigious DAISY Award by a patient who was powerfully impacted by the care they received. The patient wrote the following. "I came into the L&D unit in labor with my first baby. I am a first-time mom and was fighting a huge amount of fear and anxiety about having a baby. I'm a nurse myself, but that had just made me more anxious knowing all that could go wrong. But then Ashley came in the room. I will never forget looking up at her from the bed and immediately feeling comforted by her kind eyes and big smile. She was cheerful, unrushed, calm, and confident, and because of her, I felt I could face my fears and was not alone. I know she was on the downhill slope of her shift, but she never let on if she was tired. She was so professional, yet in so many ways motherly. I only had her for a few hours until shift change, but she made a huge impact on my experience as a patient and laboring mom. I will never forget her or the care she provided to me. She even came back that night after my daughter was born to meet her and congratulate us. She really is an exceptional nurse, and I was inspired to be like Ashley for my patients. It is because of Ashley's compassionate and caring efforts that her patient experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients and families feel at home, Midland Health reported. Congratulations, Ashley Labarda. The DAISY Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary, compassionate care. Midland Memorial Hospital, MMH, is one of more than 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognizes their nurses with this prestigious award. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or any other staff member, anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary compassionate care being provided by a nurse. Have you recently had an extraordinary experience with a nurse at Midland Memorial Hospital? Please submit a DAISY Award nomination at the following link, https://midlandhealth.org/main/DAISY-award-nomination-form. Chronic pain. More than 1 in 5 U.S. adults lived with chronic pain in 21, by Linda Searing, The Washington Post. About 52 million adults in the United States, more than 1 in 5, were living with chronic pain in 2021, according to a report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That included 17 million who experienced chronic pain severe enough to substantially restrict their daily activities, referred to as high-impact chronic pain. Health experts generally define chronic pain as pain affecting any part of the body and lasting for 3 months or more, sometimes for years. Psychological factors. Chronic pain may stem from an injury or infection or be related to an ongoing condition such as arthritis or cancer. It also can be caused by such psychological factors as stress, anxiety, or depression. In these cases, it's known as psychosomatic pain. The CDC report found that chronic pain, including the high-impact type, was more prevalent among women than men and among older adults, affecting about 30% of those 65 to 84. It also was more common among people with a disability and those with poor general health. Managing the pain. Treatments for chronic pain vary greatly, but they usually start with trying to identify and treat the initial cause of the pain. After that, the focus turns to managing the pain itself and improving the person's ability to function. This often involves a combination of medication, lifestyle changes, therapy, and complementary health treatments such as acupuncture, meditation, and massage. City manager attends last city council meeting. Midland Reporter Telegram. Midland City Manager Robert Patrick sat in his last Midland City Council meeting Tuesday. The city manager will retire at the end of the week, according to a date in a previous Reporter Telegram article. Patrick became city manager in April 2021, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. He had previously served as interim city manager and assistant city manager. He has worked for the city of Midland for around 12 years. City to fund $700,000 Calm Aquatics Agreement, by Stuart Doreen. There are still details to figure out, but City of Midland leaders promised to fund a $700,000 agreement with City of Midland Aquatics. Calm Aquatics, a nonprofit and not part of City of Midland operations, came before the Midland City Council as officials sought $700,000 in marketing and promotions revenue from the Midland Development Corp. State law allows development corporations to spend up to 10% of a year's budget on marketing and promotions, it was said at the meeting. On Tuesday, two items came before the council to approve. The first was a $30,000 agreement over 2 years with the Midland Hispanic Cultural Center. Calm Aquatics is asking for money to help reline Calm's competition pool. In both cases, the City of Midland reported the agreements will allow for the advertising and publicizing of the City of Midland for the purpose of developing new and expanded business enterprises. There really was no debate about whether to fund Calm Aquatics. The item was tabled as city leaders will debate where the money comes from. If the entire $700,000 comes from the MDC, it would be the MDC's second largest payment for marketing or promotional purposes since 2016, second only to a physician recruitment payment. City leaders expressed worries about such a payment being used for a capital expense item. It was also mentioned the city council could use the city's reserve fund, the savings, or the hotel motel tax fund to help make the total payment to Calm Aquatics. MDC officials reported nearly $7.9 million has been allotted to Midland organizations for marketing and promotion since 2016, including a previous payment of $40,000 to Calm Aquatics in 2018 and $185,500 to the Hispanic Cultural Center in 2018. Brad Swendig reminded the Council of Calm Aquatics' involvement in Midland's community, including mentioning its swimming and diving programs, the facility high schools and UTPB uses, the competitions Calm Aquatics brings to Midland, and the wellness program it offers hundreds of members. Arthritis. Calm Aquatics hosts Water Walk to cure arthritis. In support of the 60 million people living with arthritis, Calm Aquatics will host its third annual Water Walk to cure arthritis. Participants can choose to take a walk at the park, water walk, take a water class, or swim laps independently to meet their goal of moving for 60 minutes. Participants can join any of the Let's Move Challenge events on Friday. Arthritis Walk, 8:30 a.m., Winlands Park. Arthritis Class, 10 a.m., Wellness Pool. Deep Class, 10 a.m., Aerobics Pool. A Calm membership is not required to join Team Wavemakers. Simply purchase the $10 one-day event pass to attend an arthritis class, water walk, or swim laps. For more information or to donate, visit https://events.arthritis.org/team/wavemakers or email rsimmons@calmaquatics.com. DPS, Odessa man, 60, dies after collision on Business 20, by Mercedes Cordero. A 60-year-old Odessa man died Monday following a collision in Midland County, according to the Department of Public Safety. A DPS report stated a 2018 Dodge Ram traveling westbound on Business 20 in the left lane made a U-turn at the intersection of SCR 1290 and was struck by a 2007 GMC Envoy traveling eastbound on Business 20 in the left lane. The driver of the GMC Envoy, Pedro Perez Garcia, was pronounced deceased on the scene, according to DPS. The driver of the Dodge Ram was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital in stable condition. The accident happened at 7:06 a.m. Garcia was not wearing a seatbelt, according to DPS. The fatality is the 14th reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. Health and Wellness, Well-Being, Here's How to Sleep and Get Up Earlier, by Lisa Strauss, special to the Washington Post. Life is not so easy for my patients who are night owls. In the United States, the normative sleep schedule runs from about 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., though this varies with age, gender, geography, latitude and longitude, season, and cultural norms. Night owls are people who are inclined to fall asleep and wake up hours later than the societal norm and who struggle to adapt to a more typical schedule even with effort. If they go to sleep when it feels most natural, however, they generally fall asleep easily and enjoy sleep of good quality. They may be diagnosed with delayed sleep-wake phase disorder. Lifestyle, for example, late-night light exposure, may contribute to the tendency, but scientists have also identified multiple genetic loci that inform chronotype, or the biological disposition toward early, late, or intermediate sleep timing. Many night owls have lived with their propensity since at least 13 years. Being a night owl can be costly to physical health, emotional well-being, cognitive function, productivity, financial well-being, self-esteem, relationships, and safety. These costs flow from cumulative sleep loss, having to function in the morning when sleep propensity is still high, frequent counterclockwise adjustments, much like revisiting the shift to daylight saving time every Sunday night, misalignment between biological rhythm and natural patterns of sunlight and darkness, possible performance or timeline issues at school, work, and home, and perhaps mischaracterization as lazy, inconsiderate, or oppositional. Needing to jam responsibilities into too few hours, constrained social opportunities. One of my patients routinely fell asleep around 2 a.m. and felt chronically in a fog, he said, because he had to rise early for work. He pressed the snooze alarm repeatedly, diminishing his morning sleep quality. He had been reprimanded for showing up late at work. He battled depression, though his mood was better when he could sleep at will. We worked together for a few sessions, and he was able to advance his sleep timing by more than 2 hours. Here are some strategies that helped him and that may help other night owls. Many people begin to see results in just a few days. Evening blue light blocking and dimming. Many of my patients have read about the importance of avoiding screens and blue light late at night. But it's not just screens and blue lights that delay biological rhythm, and it's not just late night exposures that matter. Light in the early evening mitigates the impact of later light, but it is best to block the short wavelength blue end of the spectrum in the white lights all around us beginning about 3 hours before the time you hope to program your body to fall asleep. That means beginning at 8 p.m. if you want to fall asleep at 11 p.m. The sun sets hours before most of us go to sleep, but artificial light sends a continuing sunlight signal to our biological clocks. Short wavelength light contributes most potently because it is preferentially absorbed by the photoreceptive cells in the retina that deliver the weightiest inputs to the biological clock. Short wavelength light also suppresses the darkness signaling hormone melatonin. When short wavelength lights are blocked, there are still longer wavelengths hitting the retina, so dimming to just above eye strain level is important. Even better, introduce blue blocking and dimming by going outdoors for sunset to experience natural transitions in wavelength, intensity, and solar angle, or simulate sunset indoors with a programmable bulb. Never look directly at the sun or a bulb. You can achieve blue blocking with special glasses that filter out light from at least 400 to 495 nanometers. Orange lenses are more comfortable than red, and good brands include Uvex with the SCT Orange lens, inexpensive, and Spectra 479. Some also come in clip-on and fit-over styles for those who wear glasses. You can also use dim red bulbs or programmable bulbs, RGB or inexpensive. Philips Hue or Wiz and Wyze are more customizable. Apps such as Flux or physical filters from companies such as Low Blue Lights can be used for devices. Minimize use of screens at night. They are still too bright and close range. Nighttime darkness. Darkness is ideal after the sleep onset time you aspire to. Photoreceptors are especially sensitive under dark adapted conditions and are vulnerable to the effects of sudden light. Also, light obtained hours into our sleep cycles has an outsized impact on the biological clock. Even brief light can alter rhythms. Morning light. My patients have also read about the importance of morning light for programming earlier sleep, but most are not aware that light too early can shift rhythm in the wrong direction, as if the sun is still up rather than newly up. A useful rule of thumb is to obtain the light no earlier than 90 minutes before your currently natural rising time. For instance, if your natural rising time is 11 a.m., you could set the alarm for 9:30 a.m. to get the light. This allows you to safely expose yourself to the light earlier as your natural rising time moves earlier. Light close to natural rising time is beneficial but less impactful than light 60 to 90 minutes earlier. Outdoor light for 30 minutes is best. If outdoor light is impractical, consider using a commercial light box such as those from Carex, Verilux, or Northern Light Technologies for 30 minutes. Speak with your doctor before using a light box. Do not look directly at the light. Or you can sit near a window with the shades open and lights on while working on the computer for an hour, if medically safe. As you begin naturally to wake earlier, obtain the morning light earlier. If you do not naturally wake earlier, try getting up 15 minutes earlier every day or so to get the light that much earlier. When your sleep timing is where you want it, you can cut the exposure duration in half. Evening melatonin. Your doctor may recommend short-term use of melatonin or an agonist at very low dose, 0.3 or 0.5 mg, to mirror biological levels. It exerts its maximal phase-advancing effect about 6 hours before currently natural sleep onset. Night owls often take it too late or at too high a dose for optimal effect. Supportive measures. Move your evening routine, including dinner, earlier. Avoid stimulating activity late at night to permit earlier sleepiness. Limit caffeine and consume it earlier. Don't forgo relaxation time. Exercise early in your biological morning or mid-afternoon. Eat breakfast fairly early in your biological morning. Avoid late-night exercise and eating. Avoid lengthy and late-day naps. Strive for daylight or mild blue enrichment during the day. Johnson Ramsey Argue Over Horseshoe Committee by Ben Sheffer. A dispute took place between Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey and County Judge Terry Johnson about Johnson's Horseshoe Citizens Committee during Monday's Commissioner's Court meeting. Before J. Ross Lacey, acting as spokesperson for the committee, laid out recommendations to the county regarding the current horseshoe contract, Johnson outlined the committee and its formation. The county judge said around 6 to 8 months ago he asked a group of citizens, business people, customers, religious people, and people from all walks of life to review operations between the county and Horseshoe Management. Dooley Management Company operates the Midland County Complex. Johnson said he attended the committee's first two meetings but let the committee work amongst themselves from that point forward. Before Lacey shared his presentation, Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey shared the concerns he had regarding the committee and its formation. Ramsey read from an email thread between Johnson and himself in May 2022. When Johnson emailed Ramsey saying he was in the preliminary process of organizing the committee, Ramsey responded by saying that he would like to be a part of the committee and included 16 questions regarding its purpose, which he read aloud during Monday's meeting. What is the stated, written objective of this proposed citizens' committee? What is the stated, written criteria for committee members? Who will select the proposed committee members? How many citizens will be on the proposed committee? What is the start and end dates for committee meetings? What is the proposed time and location for the meetings? Will the meetings of the proposed committee be open to the public? If so, how will that be publicized and will public comment be taken? How will the formation of the proposed committee be published? Will a chair be elected by the proposed committee? Who will moderate the meetings? Who will take the minutes? Will there be specific items the proposed committee will be tasked to address? Who will compile and present the outcome of the proposed committee? When will this proposed committee be brought to court for discussion? As stated in your email, define the objectives of suggestions for future operations. As stated in your email, define the objectives of possible presentation of proposed contract. Johnson replied by saying no county official, including himself, would serve on the committee to limit political influence in the committee's proceedings. Ramsey agreed that political interests shouldn't come into play and said the questions he laid out should be answered prior to the committee's formation. He said the county judge forming a committee by himself could be problematic. Johnson said county commissioners can form any committee they like when they see fit. Ramsey continued to say he later found out that several of the committee members were Johnson's political supporters. Johnson said during commissioner's court that 3/4 of Midlanders are his supporters, given the portion of the vote he won during the election for county judge in 2022. Johnson won 65% of the vote in the GOP primary and was not challenged in the general election. Ramsey said Johnson should have brought the committee to commissioner's court before it was officially formed, while Johnson said Ramsey just wanted control of the committee. The committee interviewed Ramsey for his input on horseshoe operations and the contract between the county and the event center's management. Johnson briefly addressed a concern he's mentioned before, that past and current county officials have hindered him from getting things done. Johnson stated that it was his predecessor in a previous court that voted to give Dooley a 5-year contract. He also stated that multiple members of the current court used the issue of operations at the Horseshoe during their respective campaigns in 2022. Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez attempted to get back on track by chiming in and letting Lacey give the Citizen Committee's presentation. One member of the Citizens Committee, Bernadette Granger, said the committee was free of bias or political influence and that she would not have participated in the committee if she felt it was unfair. The committee recommended the county terminate the current horseshoe contract as soon as practical and hire an outside attorney to draft a new one. The county commissioners approved the recommendation 4-0, with Ramsey abstaining from the vote. Midlanders die in two-vehicle crash on Briarwood Avenue. By Mercedes Cordero. Two Midland men died Tuesday morning in a two-vehicle accident in Northwest Midland, according to the Midland Police Department. MPD officers responded at about 6:54 a.m. to a two-vehicle accident in the 7200 block of Briarwood Avenue. Kyle Lee Nettles, 28, driving a white Ford Fusion, was traveling against traffic headed east in the westbound lane of the 7200 block of Briarwood. James Michael Butts, 25, was traveling in a white Toyota Camry westbound and did not have time to react and collided with the Ford Fusion, according to MPD. Nettles and Butts were pronounced deceased at the scene. There were no other occupants in either vehicle. Next of kin were notified. The investigation is ongoing. The fatalities are the 15th and 16th reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. The Safe and Legal Way to Fly with a Firearm by Alexandra Scores, The Dallas Morning News. The number of guns found at Texas airports is surging, according to the Transportation Security Administration's 2022 data. So if you want to fly with your firearm, here's the safe and legal way to do so, according to TSA officials. You can travel with a firearm in your checked luggage, said Amy Williams, TSA Federal Security Director at Dallas Love Field. First, we ask that you contact your air carrier for their specific requirements. The requirements are that the gun be unloaded in a hard-sided case that is locked, and the ammunition must be in its original container. The gun has to be declared with the air carrier in your checked luggage. The most common phrase TSA hears from passengers is that they forgot the gun was in their bag, Williams said. It's very important for everyone to check their bag before they start packing to make sure they know exactly what is in their bag, Williams said. In 2022, DFW International Airport reported the second highest number of guns found among U.S. airports, 385, behind the 448 detected at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. That was a record for DFW. Two other Texas airports also ranked in the nation's top eight for firearms found at TSA checkpoints last year, including third-ranked George Bush Intercontinental in Houston and eighth-ranked Austin-Bergstrom International Airport with 298 and 150, respectively. About 88% of all firearms found at checkpoints are loaded, TSA Administrator David Pekosk said at a South by Southwest presentation in March. If you carry a firearm in a checkpoint, we're going to see it, he said. It's going to take you, obviously, a lot more time because we're going to bring law enforcement over, we're going to do an investigation, and you're likely going to face a civil penalty. Texas bill proposes up to $25,000 for armed school sentinels by Acacia Coronado, Associated Press, Austin. Texas schools could offer stipends of up to $25,000 to staff members who add the role of armed campus sentinels to their regular duties under a proposal advanced Tuesday by state lawmakers in response to the Uvalde classroom attack last year. With U.S. mass shootings on a record pace so far in 2023, there have been new calls among some lawmakers for more armed personnel in schools. Also on Tuesday, U.S. Senator Rick Scott of Florida proposed an $80 million federal program to fund armed officers in all U.S. schools. Texas already lets teachers carry guns under a voluntary program that requires firearm lessons but has drawn relatively few takers. Under the new proposal, armed personnel must also train in identifying students with mental health issues. What I want to pay them for is hopefully getting the training needed to spot the children before we have a problem, said Republican State Representative Ken King, who authored the bill. The legislation, which overwhelmingly passed the Texas House with bipartisan support, now goes to the Senate, where its prospects are uncertain. Texas lawmakers have only a few weeks left to pass any school safety measures before adjourning on May 29. Under the Texas bill, teachers and staff of public and open enrollment charter schools would be eligible to earn up to $25,000 extra for opting to be armed for campus security. They would also need to take courses in first aid, firearms training, and mental health training, which would be added to the mental health training Texas lawmakers want to require for all school employees. The Waystone Provides Space with Games Beer by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Tucked away in the Plaza Oaks Shopping Center sits a warm and wood-filled nook shaded by large trees and paired with earth-toned patio seating. Inside, the largest board game library in Midland fills bookshelves built onto every word wall while flavorful and bounty taps flow from the small-scale in-house brewery. Owned by Ted and Jaslyn Morehouse and Henry and Franny Zollinger, the Waystone checks in as the Tall City's newest social hub and nano brewery. For the last 3 years, the crew conducted the necessary work in order to acquire their brewing equipment, finish construction, and perfect their board game collection. The main focus was the brewery, but we always loved playing board at breweries, so wanted that to be a part, Ted explained. The board games take the edge off the intensity, makes it more social, and they're just fun in general. We have 160 games you can demo, and if you like them, you can buy them. In conjunction with the Wastestone's communal atmosphere, a no-technology rule reigns supreme for guests of all ages. Long tables encourage a friendly and inviting atmosphere between parties, ultimately creating the perfect mix-and-mingle hotspot for Midlanders looking for a relaxed evening. If someone gets out a laptop or tablet, I'll go over and say, "Sorry, that's not cool here." And for the most part, everybody's been really receptive, Ted said. Our agenda is to get people off their screens and just hang out, cram in on tables, and get to know new people. Along each bookshelf, patrons will find staff picks and game explanations. As for the drinks, a Wastestone currency system where customers purchase tokens, which essentially act as gift cards, can be cashed in for a glass, allowing the bartender to be more efficient. Currently on tap, visitors will find four Wastestone creations: Squire Hopslap IPA, Porter Pale Ale, Merlin's Beard IPA, and a homemade root beer soda. Guest beers include Eccentric Brewing Company's Midland Lager, Tall City Brewing Company's Porch Pounder Pilsner, Lone Pint Brewery's Yellow Rose IPA, Magnolia, Texas, Elysian Brewing Company's Space Dust IPA, Seattle, Breckenridge Brewery's Vanilla Porter, Littleton, Colorado, Austin East Cider's Blood Orange Cider, and St. Arnold Brewing Company's Art Car IPA, Houston. Alcohol-free drinks include cranberry sparkling water, coffee, and tea. Food will not be found on the Wastestone menu. However, a partnership with Spitz across the parking lot allows guests to order from the Mediterranean restaurant and have their meals brought to them at the pub. Although the business just opened, Ted said the idea wheels continue to turn for the Wastestone team, and game tournaments, murder mystery dinners, and more will be part of the beer and board's future. The Wastestone can be found at 2101 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 27. Business hours run 5 to 10 p.m. Thursday and Friday, and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday. Private parties and more are available outside of regular operating hours. Contact info@wastestonebrewing.com for more info. Stay up to date with the Wastestone on Facebook at facebook.com/wastestonebrew. Obituaries. Aaron Todd Flood was born December 7, 1978, raised in Midland, Texas by Tommy Flood. Aaron Flood influenced many people, and he will be missed but not forgotten. Go rest high up on the mountain. Your work here on earth is done. Viewing visitation will be held Wednesday, April 26, 2023, at Mayberry Funeral Home, located at 406 East Illinois Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. A celebration of life will be held Thursday, April 27, 2023, at Crossroads Church, 6900 East Highway 191, Odessa, Texas. Services are entrusted to the care of Mayberry Funeral Home. Diana Ruth Hildebrand Schmid, age 79, passed away peacefully April 23, 2023. No services are planned per her request. In lieu of flowers, please donate to Angels Hospice, 1030 Andrews Highway, Suite 104, Midland, Texas, 79701. A special thank you to Brookdale of Midland and the tremendous care from the staff of Angels Hospice, especially Kendra and Michaela. Funeral services have been entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home, 408 North St. Peter, Stanton, Texas, 79782. Online condolences can be made at www.stantonfh.com. Frankie Nell Simons passed away peacefully on April 8, 2023. The family would like to express their sincerest thanks to the community of Palacios and the members of Agape Family Outreach Church for their love and support in the last several years. A celebration of life ceremony will be held at the Agape Outreach Church, 1811 Newsom Boulevard in Palacios, Texas, on May 6, 2023 at 11 a.m. Arrangements are with Palacios Funeral Home, Palacios, Texas, 361-972-2012.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, April 19th, 2023. Cognitive health. Lifestyle choices can influence Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia, and the risk is real. One in three seniors die with a form of dementia. The National Institutes of Health has spent billions of dollars on Alzheimer's research already. Let's face reality. When it comes to stopping or reversing Alzheimer's disease, the current success rate is zero. Some experts believe the focus on developing a cure in the form of a single drug is wrong. Alzheimer's is a complex chronic disease of aging, and a single agent may not be adequate. Also, the focus on targeting amyloid and tau may not be enough, because by the time amyloid and tau get accumulated in the brain, hundreds of thousands of neurons have already died, which means it may be too late to improve symptoms. Also, amyloid doesn't explain the whole story. Not everyone with amyloid plaques in the brain has the disease. But when it comes to our cognitive health, we have more control over it than we think. Recent studies suggest that if we adopt healthier lifestyles early in our life, we may be able to prevent dementia. As much as 35% of dementia cases can be prevented if people take steps now to live a healthier lifestyle. Quote, while it may be easier to blame a devastating disease like Alzheimer's on a single gene, this false belief is killing millions. The truth is much harder to accept, that we are bringing Alzheimer's disease into our households through the choices we make every day. End quote. Doctors Dean and Aisha Sherzai, scientists, neurologists, and researchers. What we know for sure. Lifestyle, not genetics, is the largest indicator of risk when it comes to Alzheimer's, and there is compelling data that Alzheimer's is deeply influenced by simple lifestyle choices that we make in our lives every day. 1. Diet. Diets rich in plant foods and minimal animal fats, like the Mediterranean diet, have been associated with slower cognitive decline and lower risk of Alzheimer's. The protective ingredients appeared to be the diet's high vegetable content and a lower ratio of saturated to unsaturated fats. In Harvard Women's Health study, higher saturated fat intake, sourced predominantly from dairy, meat, and processed foods, was associated with significantly worse trajectory of cognition and memory. Women with the highest saturated fat intake had a 60 to 70% greater chance of cognitive deterioration over time. Women with lowest saturated fat intake had the brain function on average of women 6 years younger. Antioxidant properties of berries and dark green leafy vegetables make them the brain foods of the fruit and vegetable kingdom. In addition, studies have shown benefits of turmeric and saffron as well. Animal studies have shown that Alzheimer's is a disease of old carnivores, animals that feed on flesh, whereas old herbivores, animals that feed on plants, do not get Alzheimer's disease. Considering that it takes decades to develop this disease, it's never too early to start eating healthier. Remember, what is good for your heart is also good for your brain. 2. Exercise. There have been many studies and trials to prove that exercise lowers risk for Alzheimer's disease. In 2010, a study published in the Archives of Neurology, a group of people with mild cognitive impairment put them on aerobic exercise for 40 to 60 minutes a day, 4 days a week, for 6 months. The control group was instructed to simply stretch for the time periods. Results showed that in the control group, cognitive function continued to decline. But the exercising group not only didn't get worse, it got better. They got more answers correct after 6 months, indicating their memory had improved. Subsequent studies using MRI scan found that aerobic exercise can actually reverse age-related shrinkage in the memory centers of the brain. No such effect was found in the stretching and toning groups or a non-aerobic strength training group. Aerobic exercise can help improve cerebral flow, improve memory performance, and help preserve brain tissue. 3. Sleep. Studies have shown that in a deep sleep, amyloid production is turned off. Deep sleep also helps to consolidate short-term memories into long-term memories. And it's when the brain sort of, quote, cleans, unquote, itself. To get into a deep sleep, you have to sleep for enough time, more than just 4 to 5 hours. 4. Reduce stress. Managing your day-to-day stress better is good for the entire body, especially the brain. Stress management techniques like yoga, meditation, and visualization could help you manage your stress better. 5. Social interaction. Studies suggest that loneliness can lead to additional stress and may be a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. Prioritize social engagement and stay in touch with family members and friends. 6. Learn new things. Not only physical exercise, but mental exercise is just as important in preventing and delaying the onset of cognitive decline. Learning new skills can build new nerve connections that maintain optimal brain health. Experts say it is more than just a crossword puzzle. Try adopting a new hobby, learning a new language, or playing a new musical instrument. To learn more about how you could lower your risk of developing this progressive disease or how you could help a family member fight this deadly disease, come to Alzheimer's Association's annual education conference. Quote, Healthy Living, Pathway to Hope, end quote. From 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on April 26th at the Midland College's Carrasco Room. Pre-registration is encouraged. Register here. https://bit.ly/HLPTHC4-26. CNEs and CEUs are provided at no charge. Arthritis. COM Aquatics hosts Water Walk to cure arthritis. In support of the 60 million people living with arthritis, COM Aquatics will host its third annual Water Walk to Cure Arthritis. Participants can choose to take a walk at the park, water walk, take a water class, or swim laps independently to meet their goal of moving for 60 minutes. Participants can join any of the, quote, Let's Move Challenge, end quote, events on April 28th. Arthritis Walk, 8:30 a.m., Winlands Park. Arthritis Class, 10 a.m., Wellness Pool. Deep Class, 10 a.m., Aerobics Pool. A COM membership is not required to join Team Wavemakers. Simply purchase the $10 one-day event pass to attend an arthritis class, water walk, or swim laps. For more information or to donate, visit events.arthritis.org/team/wavemakers or email rsimmons@comaquatics.com. Honor, NAP elects Bredemus in class of 2023. The National Academies of Practice, NAP, is pleased to announce the election of Brandon Kit Bredemus as a Distinguished Fellow in the Nursing Academy. Class of 2023 fellows were welcomed into the National Academies of Practice during the awards and induction ceremony in Washington, D.C. on April 1st. Founded in 1981, the National Academies of Practice advances interprofessional education, scholarship, research, practice, and public policy. It educates and informs members and others, facilitates collaborative scholarship and research opportunities, recruits, engages, retains, and mentors a network of members, and advocates the value of interprofessional practice and improves healthcare and policy for all. The academies within the National Academies of Practice include allopathic and osteopathic medicine, athletic training, audiology, dentistry, nursing, occupational therapy, optometry, pharmacy, physical therapy, podiatric medicine, psychology, respiratory care, social work, speech-language pathology, and veterinary medicine. Fellowship in the National Academies of Practice is an honor extended to those who have excelled in their profession and are dedicated to furthering interprofessional practice, scholarship, and policy in support of interprofessional care. As the Alliance of Professionals collaborating to transform health and well-being, we are excited to bring the new class of 2023 fellows on board. Mental health. Why are teen girls in crisis? It's not just social media. Anxiety over academics. Post-lockdown malaise, social media angst. Study after study says American youth are in crisis, facing unprecedented mental health challenges that are burdening teen girls in particular. Among the most glaring data, a recent Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report showed almost 60% of U.S. girls reported persistent sadness and hopelessness. Rates are up in boys, too, but about half as many are affected. Adults have theories about what is going on, but what do teens themselves say? Is social media the root of their woes? Are their male peers somehow immune or part of the problem? The Associated Press interviewed 5 girls in 4 states and agreed to publish only their first names because of the sensitive nature of the topics they discussed. The teens offered sobering and sometimes surprising insight. Quote, We are so strong and we go through so much, end quote, said Amelia, a 16-year-old Illinois girl who loves to sing and wants to be a surgeon. She also has depression and anxiety. Like 13% of U.S. high school girls surveyed in the government report, she is a suicide attempt survivor. Hospitalization after the 2020 attempt and therapy helped. But Amelia has also faced bullying, toxic friendships, and menacing threats from a boy at school who said she, quote, deserved to be raped, end quote. More than 1 in 10 girls said they'd been forced to have sex, according to the CDC report, the first increase noted in the government's periodic survey. Sexual threats are just one of the burdens teen girls say they face. Quote, we are trying to survive in a world that is out to get us, end quote, Amelia said. Emma, an 18-year-old aspiring artist in Georgia with attention deficit disorder and occasional depression, says worries about academics and college are a huge source of stress. Quote, lately, in myself and my friends, I realize how exhausted everyone is with the pressures of the world and the social issues and where they're going to go in the future, end quote, Emma added. Quote, all of these things pile up and crash down, end quote. Zoe, 15, was raised in Mississippi by a strict but loving single mother who pressures her to be a success in school and life. She echoes those feelings. Quote, school can be nerve-wracking and impact your mental health so much that you don't even recognize it until you're in this space where you don't know what to do, end quote, Zoe said. She's also had friendship struggles that ended in deep depression and felt the discomfort of being the only black kid in class. Several girls said they face added pressure from society standards that put too much focus on how they look. Quote, a lot of people view women's bodies and girls' bodies as sexual, end quote, Emma said. Quote, it's overwhelming to have all these things pushed on us, end quote. The hashtag MeToo movement began when these girls were quite young, but it intensified during the pandemic and they're hyper-aware of uninvited sexual advances. Boys are less aware, they suggest. The girls cite crass jokes, inappropriate touching, sexual threats, or actual violence. Girls say the unwanted attention can feel overwhelming. Quote, we deserve to not be sexualized or catcalled because we are kids, end quote, Amelia said. Saya, an 18-year-old in New Jersey, said almost every girl she knows has dealt with sexual harassment. Quote, that's just been the normal for me, end quote, she said. Quote, when you're walking alone as a girl, you're automatically put in this vulnerable situation, end quote, Saya said. Quote, I think that's so sad. I don't know what it feels like to not have that fear, end quote. McKenna, a high school senior in Mississippi, said she and her friends sometimes wear baggy clothes to hide their shapes, but boys, quote, comment no matter what, end quote. She has had depression and therapy and said she has grown up in a community where mental health is still sometimes stigmatized. Quote, often in the black community, we aren't as encouraged to express emotion, end quote, because of what previous generations endured, said McKenna, who works with a teen health advocacy group. Quote, we're expected to have hearts of steel, end quote, she said. Quote, but sometimes it's okay to not be okay, end quote. Social media platforms contribute with their focus on superficial appearances and making perfectionism seem attainable. Girls say they're just part of the problem. Quote, social media has completely shifted the way we think and feel about ourselves, end quote, in good and bad ways, McKenna said. She's felt pressure to be perfect when comparing herself with others online. But she also follows social media influencers who talk about their own mental health challenges and who make it seem, quote, okay for me to feel sad and vulnerable, end quote, she said. Girls have historically been disproportionately affected by depression and anxiety. But those statistics at least partly reflect the fact that girls are often more likely than boys to talk about feelings and emotions, said Dr. Hina Talib, an adolescent medicine specialist and spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Zoe, the Mississippi 15-year-old, says boys have to keep up a, quote, macho facade, end quote, and are less likely to admit their angst. Quote, I feel like they might feel that way, we just don't see it, end quote, she said. A study published in March in the Journal of the American Medical Association found that in 2019, before the pandemic, about 60% of children hospitalized for mental health reasons were girls. A decade earlier, the difference was only slight. COVID-19 lockdowns added another dimension, thrusting academic and social lives online, Talib said. Some kids entered the pandemic as youngsters and emerged with more mature bodies, socially awkward, uncertain how to navigate friendships and relationships. They live in a world beset with school shootings, a rapidly changing climate, social and political unrest, and restrictions on reproductive care and transgender rights. The CDC report released in February included teens queried in fall 2021, when U.S. COVID-19 cases and deaths were still high. Other data and anecdotal reports suggest many teens continue to struggle. quote, "the pandemic as a percentage of their lives is huge," end quote, said Tlaib. Expecting kids to be unscathed may be unrealistic. Quote, "it's going to change a generation," end quote, she said.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American News for Wednesday, April the 12th. The headlines read, County approves selling e-cigs to inmates. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths displayed to the Ector County Commissioner's Court the e-cigarette he plans to sell to inmates at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. After a brief presentation from Griffiths, the court approved the sale of e-cigarettes to inmates at no cost to the county or taxpayers, with all proceeds collected earmarked for use at the jail. Griffiths explained to members of the media Tuesday morning in the commissioner's courtroom at the Ector County Administration Annex, room 120, 1010 East 8th Street, the e-cigarettes are correction grade. There's a specific company that makes these e-cigs and tries to make them alter-proof, Griffiths said. The e-cig has to be returned in the state that it was given to them or they won't get another one. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said his hesitation with selling the e-cigarettes to inmates subsidized after Griffiths spoke about the matter and had a physical example of what the e-cigarette will look like. The e-cigarette is clear with a barcode on the inside. The barcode will be scanned and matched to the inmate who purchases that e-cigarette, and it will be re-scanned when it is brought back. My biggest hesitation was, can inmates use these e-cigarettes for something nefarious, Fawcett said. After looking at the e-cigarette and speaking with Sheriff Griffiths, they put their time in looking at the different vendors, and I believe this particular product is going to be one that will be safe for the inmates, safe for the jailers, and safe for all the staff. The cost of the e-cigarette will be $3.85 each. That come in a 50-count package. Griffiths said one e-cigarette is the equivalent to a standard pack of cigarettes. 20. The jail plans to have an initial order of 1,000. The cost to the inmates will be $14. That includes $1.07 in sales tax. Griffiths said inmates can purchase e-cigarettes with their commissionary funds. Griffiths said inmates can only purchase and have one e-cigarette at a time, and before the inmate can purchase another e-cigarette, they have to return their initial e-cigarette purchase and have it re-scanned into the system. Griffiths said if the e-cigarette has been tampered with, that inmate won't be able to purchase any more e-cigarettes. If you don't abuse it, then you get to use it, Griffiths said. If someone starts trying to do other things with it, that individual isn't getting another one. The court also approved the jail to sell pizza to inmates at no cost to the county or taxpayers, with all proceeds to be used at the jail. Griffiths said the sale of pizza is mainly for Sundays and Mondays, but the purchase and sale prices haven't been finalized.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.